I'm Dr. Leif Tapanola from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Our guest today is John Robison. He is the Public Lands and Wildlife Director for the Idaho Conservation League here in Idaho. We're talking about the importance of public lands in Idaho. Peter, do you enjoy our public lands here
in
Idaho?
I absolutely do, and I think we could probably be spending half a dozen episodes every year on the importance of our public lands in Idaho.
Well, we've got a lot of them. We'll get to that in our trivia question, but, you know, they're everywhere. When
yes.
you're out west, if you weren't born out west and you come out west, as both you and I have, you kind of realize, like, wow, there's just so much public land around.
And the access to it is fantastic. You never have to worry about a trail.
You never have to worry about a trail. That's true. Well, we're going to dig into that and its importance and all that stuff. But before we do, I think you got nature in the news.
Yeah, Leif, you know, we are actually getting really close to Skynet and the future Terminator-run dystopian world of those movies.
Oh, I love dystopian worlds, especially ones that are coming.
Controlled by killer robots.
Killer robots.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Can't die. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, research from Johns Hopkins and the Stanford University used imitation learning to train the Da Vinci surgical system robot to perform fundamental surgical procedures.
Okay.
That is, this robot learned by watching videos of seasoned surgeons.
Oh.
So prior to this, these Da Vinci surgical robots, system robots, needed to be programmed, you know, using hand coding, which could take years.
Sure.
To code in a specific function, and even then...
And then that's not very adaptive.
No, and it's right? not very consistent either.
Yep. Yep.
Well, what the research did is they took the model combining imitation learning with the same architecture that underpins ChatGPT.
Sure.
Except the words and text was replaced by kinematics. And kinematics is a language that breaks down the angles of robotic motion with math. And the programming has been replaced with, of course, image inputting, and the AI system then determines the right action. And it's really quick for these surgical robots to pick this up, and it's able to learn the procedure, then generalize it in new environments that it's encountered.
Right.
So one of the examples they said is that they taught this robot arm to do some sutures, and it dropped the needle, and the arm reached down and picked the needle up and continued.
Okay.
So, you know, we've got now robots that are learning quite quickly.
That learn cut here, don't cut there.
Right.
Sew it back together like this.
Right. And can you imagine the danger of that, especially if we develop a Skynet?
Well, I thought you were talking about how positive this was, and you took it a left turn and you made it dangerous.
Oh, of course.
So
yes.
Bad things are going to happen to us? I thought this is a utopia that you were describing,
oh,
actually,
okay.
of like
okay.
our surgeries are going to be performed by robots that can do the job better than a live human surgeon. Maybe it drives the cost down. Procedures can happen while I'm driving to work, for example, and so on.
Okay, well, sorry, listeners. Forget what I said. Let's go with what Leif was saying.
I'm feeling optimistic today.
Okay, me too.
You like that? Maybe it's something in between. We'll find out. You know, today's trivia is all about public lands. The question today is, what percentage of Idaho is public lands? I think you might be surprised if you didn't know the answer already. When we come back from the break, John Robison will join us to talk about our public lands here in Idaho. Stay tuned.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Hey, welcome back from the break. I want to introduce our guest today. It's John Robison. He's the Public Lands and Wildlife Director for the Idaho Conservation League. First off, welcome to The Nature of Idaho.
Thanks, Leif and Peter. It's really great to be here.
John, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. And I love talking about public lands. Because everyone has a public land story. After every weekend, everyone has a public land story. After, you know, every river season or ski trip or whatever, how was your public lands experience? The hunting trip, all these things. So I work at the Idaho Conservation League. I've been here for 22 years now, working on public lands issues. And ICL is Idaho's leading voice for conservation. We're a statewide organization devoted to protecting Idaho's environment. And public lands are a core part of our vision. We are working to maintain and improve an Idaho where public lands remain public and are well managed. The air is clean, lakes and rivers are healthy, fish and wildlife thrive. And basically, we've got a prosperous, sustainable future for all Idahoans. And one thing we've come back to again and again is how fundamental Idaho's public lands are to our quality of life and our economy and our stories and our heritage. And so anyway, I'm very excited to talk about public lands and how folks are coming together to protect them and steward them. But also there's sometimes a roller coaster involved too. And every so often something comes up to threaten public lands. And so that's why I'm happy to be able to speak out on behalf of all the Idahoans who love our public lands.
So John, you got to it a little bit there in your answer, but help me understand why there's a lot of ways in which land can be managed and can be thought of in terms of who owns what and who's in charge of what and how decisions are made. We talked, I guess, at the beginning of the show, you know, if you come from lands out east in the United States, there's not a whole lot of public land. A lot of it's privately held. And that's clearly one way to manage land and to think about ownership and stewardship, so to speak, for land. Can you make the case for the value of public land and what it is that we get to enjoy out west in a state like Idaho because so much of it is public, as opposed or in contrast to a more privatized system of land ownership?
Right. And, you know, I've grew up back east, traveled back there, and a lovely place to go visit. But I think once you are used to the big country out here and the open space, it really becomes a part of you. And there's a saying where don't change Idaho, let Idaho change you. In terms of when you're out west, you just gain an appreciation for the smell of sagebrush, for the sunlight on the snowy peaks that you were just, you know, skiing or snowmobiling in earlier that day. You know, you just have this part that this is who we are. And in fact, it goes all the way back to statehood, where in 1890, out of our Idaho Constitution, it said that the people of the state of Idaho do agree and declare that we forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries of the state. And so that meant that the federal government that, you know, owned these properties were the ones that, through the Homestead Act and Carey Act and other act, you know, disposed of public lands. And then at statehood, the state of Idaho said, we don't want those other public lands out there. We don't want them at all. And we can't afford to manage them. And they're, you know, we still want access to them, but we forever disclaim all right entitled to these lands. And that actually, that decision at the time really had a fundamental effect on our character in terms of how we view our relationship with the land. And it's, you know, these are certainly working lands for our communities, but it's also where we benefit from, you know, the elk that calve up in the high country there and the trout that spawn up in the headwaters. And so there's very much a system of looking at the larger ecosystem with this. And one thing, just to be very, very clear, there's a whole history behind that with the Native Americans who were here that the federal government seized the land from. And so that's a story for another episode. But there's something to be said where the Westerners really tend to view landscapes more in their entirety. And I think that serves us all better in terms of how these things connect and how communities have to work together.
You know, I find when I'm out using our public lands, I'm relaxed. You get to enjoy everything around you. You know, coming from a place where there wasn't, if I was enjoying the woods, I was usually on someone else's property and you're waiting for the landowner to show up so you can skedaddle mm-hmm. us real fast, right? Here, you don't have to do that. You get to enjoy and see everything around you. You get to listen. You get to feel. You get to experience the land as the land in its native, true setting.
Right. Totally.
So I wonder, what can be a threat to that? What can be an argument to threaten what we've just been talking about? This may be a larger scale, holistic view of our environment and how we fit into it. That's sort of part of the Western aesthetic and way of living and understanding our world. Why would you want to privatize? There may be arguments to privatize, maybe to develop more urban areas to build houses and sort of that sort of thing. I get that. But how can we maintain public lands when there is often going to be a push to privatize?
Right. No, that's a great question. One of the things that we found is every so often, last time it was in 2014 and 2017, you've got a cycle that comes up where the idea comes over for a public lands takeover effort. And if you look back at that, it's usually for folks who seek to profit off public lands and sell them off and gain financially from this. And this goes back to 1872 in a speech by Senator John Holmes of Maine, who suggested that states seeking to claim public lands were dressing up their greed in constitutional garb. And so the latest effort of this is by the state of Utah, and they submitted a motion to file to the Supreme Court regarding what they view as unappropriated lands managed by the BLM, and they're seeking to have the Supreme Court decide the fate of some 18 million acres of lands in Utah. And the state of Idaho also submitted an amicus brief in support of this and saying that we also have an interest to wrest control from the BLM of Idaho's unappropriated lands. And it didn't say exactly whether they're going back to the states or whatever, but because the BLM hadn't specifically designated them as a national monument or a wilderness or a national conservation area, they should be up for grabs. And so, and just to be clear, this is not a motion that Idahoans have approved. It was an amicus brief filed by our Attorney General, Raul Labrador, in support of the Utah case. And this is deeply concerning. It actually bypassed the normal process of going to the local district court and going all the way to the Supreme Court. And it's focused on this somewhat nebulous language of what they deem as unappropriated lands. And let me be clear here. You know, we usually know what a wilderness area is or national conservation area, things like this. Unappropriated lands are what I think of as my general BLM lands and my back door in my backyard. These are the foothills behind our houses where we send our kids to get away from the screens and go catch some lizards. These are the places where my friends take their dogs to go charter hunting. These are where my buddies go elk hunting and hope to fill up their freezer. This is where folks go to cut down their firewood to get them through the winter. These are where folks go out with their mountain bikes and dirt bikes and go and find their favorite single track trails out there. So when you talk about unappropriated land, these are all actually places that are near and dear to people's daily lives. And every acre of quote unquote unappropriated land has an advocate and someone who relies on that land. The person at the farmer market that you talk with, their livestock probably graze on that unappropriated land. And so it's really important to think about what's at stake here. Now you might think that, well, you know, maybe it'll go better under a different ownership. And this is kind of like saying that, you know, you're renting a house and you're like, well, you know, the owners are going to sell the house and, you know, I have a relationship with them. So I'm going to, you know, put in a bid for that land and maybe I can get it for myself, you know, for my house. And then someone comes in, probably from out of state, offers puts in a cash offer for, you know, $200,000 more than the asking price. And it goes off to them and you didn't have a say in the land and in the house. And so this is the same thing here, where the people who can take advantage of these public lands and want to seize them you know, normal Idahoans can't compete. We've already seen this before up outside of McCall, Idaho, where there's large tracts of land that had been owned by Boise Cascade Timber Company. And they had, by and large, let the locals use the property. But when the land sold to DF Development, and there was a host of no trespassing signs that they put up, which was their right to do. But nowadays, folks couldn't get access to that anymore. And so that caused a lot of concern about that. And now you can see billboards selling off these signs with a tagline, experiencing the heart of Idaho's wilderness. if you can afford it, though.
Right.
For these public lands, we already own them. And what's even more special about this is that we have a say in them. The National Environmental Policy Act ensures that the BLM or Forest Service has to consult us, the owners of these lands, to find out, hey, what would you like to have happen here? We're going to do some type of management activity or restoration activity, whether it's a timber sale or a mine or a recreation trail. Which alternatives would you like? How do you see it managed? And we get to hold them accountable. If the agencies bend the rules, break the law, we can hold them accountable in court. And you cannot have that same, don't have those same safeguards when it comes to either state land or private property.
You know, another thing that I thought about as you were talking about the house metaphor. So you're renting, you buy the house, and the next thing you know, the house needs a new heater, a new roof, and the sewer line needs to be replaced. And you realize right. It's quite expensive to maintain this house. Would these potential moves right. From public to private have the same result?
No, exactly. Well, one thing that we've, and this goes way back for folks, Idaho politicians who get it, recognize that Idaho can't begin to cover the cost of managing these lands. In terms of the firefighting costs alone, where you have federal firefighting forces that come and protect our communities, fight fires, and it costs tens of millions of dollars that the state receives because of that. We couldn't afford it. And those costs are going to increase. If you have basically think about $100 million a year, and just managing these lands, there's so many things that the Forest Service and BLM can do, even with their tight budgets. You're looking at the cost of cleaning up abandoned mines and treating, you know, arsenic that's coming out of old mine shafts, things like that. The state can't afford to do that. And then if you look at issues such as managing our forests in a way that allows for recreation and fish and wildlife habitat, all this multiple use sustained yield that we're used to is built into how federal lands are managed. If you look at private ownership, it's private and we respect that and you get to do what you want to do. State lands are managed under a very different mandate. It sounds great. Oh, the state's great, great partner. But state lands, in particular endowment lands, are managed for the maximum long-term financial gain for state beneficiaries, so for schools and prisons and other institutions. And so they have a mandate that they really can't consider anything that would get in the way of that. So if it's a recreational trail or a calving habitat for elk or spawning areas, they'll do what they can to, you know, not eliminate those, but they really under a constitutional mandate to maximize that. So to your analogy, if there's a really costly wildfire season, just like the one we had, and there's all state lands, the state also has per its constitution, they have to manage the budget. And so if they own a bunch of lands and they have a bunch of, like, the equivalent of a house needing a new roof or new sewer line or something like that, it's like, we can't afford to do that, to pay for that. And we're going to have to sell off those lands. And guess what? There's someone out there that's going to buy those lands at a premium, and it's not going to be us.
Right. You know, I look at public lands also as a resource buffer, where especially when we look at our rivers, you know, our rivers are so valuable and so important to us in the state of Idaho that if we lose the public lands, we lose that protection. People will then, that's valuable property, right? Valuable lands. They can come in and do whatever they want. And we do lose that buffer. You know, we've lost that protection of our natural resources.
No, and public lands provide everything from clean water for our communities, a place for just to go and clear your mind, go for a run, to go and maybe find an elk. It's hard to manage a situation where we didn't have public lands.
I'm thinking of your analogy with the shift in homeowner. You're there trying to still enjoy the amenities of the home, right? And that metaphor. Money talks, right? And so is the motivation here to privatize simply about gaining or turning land into a financial asset? Is that a primary motivator or is it broader than that?
You know, it's hard to understand exactly that mindset when you have such a gift that and such a heritage that someone doesn't see value and wants to give away. There is an ideological approach to it. Well, if we have ownership of it, then we can do this. And I think that is, you know, really not supported by what's happening in reality, where you could say, well, you know, public lands are a net loss. You know, they're holding Idaho back. You know, if we could have the tax base of those areas, that'd be fine. If you want that tax base, that's great. Move back east. But right. Here, I'd rather have access to public lands. It's what, you know, Governor Andrews called the second paycheck of right. Our public lands out there. And again, we have folks like our former Attorney General, Lawrence Wasdin, saying, we can't take back something we never owned. We're the ones who said, don't give us the land. And Governor Otter, back in 2017, said, if the feds weren't here to pay for it, you'd blow a huge hole in the budget. So there's no doubt that public lands need help. And the Forest Service and BLM, everyone from all sides likes to critique how, oh, that outhouse isn't serviced properly, the trails aren't maintained, and all these things. And that's all true. But that's because of the budget that they, that Congress has given them. And so the solution for that is to not throw away public lands and put up no trespassing signs. The solution is to roll up our sleeves and continue the work we've done with partnerships between the state, between the counties, between the BLM and the Forest Service and nonprofits, with sportsmen's groups. And together, we're making a huge difference in the improved management of our public lands. And that's the future, and not just selling them off to the highest bidder.
Well, so I have some friends in southern Utah in particular who are very, very nervous about those public lands not being public anymore, in specific because their bikers and their single track pathways are going to get either purchased or the access to them is going to disappear. And so that's the focal point of their concern. Mm-hmm. But there are many user groups on our public lands, right? It's the land of many uses, as we like to say. And so whether you're a rancher or whether you're a hunter or whether you're a hiker or a biker or
a backpacker, a
there's
climber,
so many ways to engage. And there's so many, I keep thinking, like, if you're going from public to some level of private, you're going from many people getting value out of it to fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer people getting value for that plot of, you know, space. How can the many contribute and be a part of the solution here so that we don't lose our collective value to those? Because it seems like it's a one-way valve. As soon as you privatize, you're not going back, right?
Right. And that's the concern here. One of the things, too, is just the control issue. I think I mentioned that earlier in terms of why do this. And in the Attorney General Labrador's brief, he noted that the importance of eminent domain. And so, you know, meaning the state hoped to build roads or transmission lines, and instead of fighting through federal red tape, you know, we can just go ahead and save a lot of money if we just were to use eminent domain for this. And eminent domain it has a role, but when I think of public lands, I don't think of, you know, getting ways to exclude the public from decision-making. Public lands work best when the public is involved. And so I think that we just really want to make sure that, we really recognize the value and tell our decision-makers that. And again, past elected officials have gotten that. And back in 2017, this is fantastic. There was this great rally at the Idaho State House with over 2,000 people. And it was this fantastic mix of motorized recreationists, non-motorized recreationists, folks wearing like life jackets, folks wearing camo, and you had, you know, kids, families out there with baby joggers, and you had, you know, grandparents out there and with their, you know, hiking staffs. And it was an amazing group, all on behalf of public lands. And that is a huge, huge, just affirmation of what Idaho values really are. And so it was, and as a result of that, that rally, the efforts to seize public lands really went away, at least for a few years. And then it comes back every so often. So it might be time just to send that message out again.
Yeah. And it's a tension that's going to always exist, right? As we talked about before, if there's public land, there will always be an argument by someone that the ownership should shift. And usually it's from many people, many voices, many uses to fewer and fewer and fewer, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so this is a perennial issue that will forever happen as long as there are public lands.
You know, I think it comes up every 10 years or so, 5 or 10 years. So it does come up, but it's routinely beaten back once people realize what's at risk. And it really is, it's not just, you know, your opportunity to go get, you know, a ride in that afternoon or to go skiing on the weekend or to go camping. It's really part of our identity. You know, it's terms of how we approach each other. It's terms of how we ask each other, you know, tell me about your hunt, you know, tell me about how was that river trip, you know, tell me about this. And these are stories that we pass on to our kids and our grandkids. And it really is part of our identity. And so this is where I'm hopeful about this, of one, people speaking their word, but also the fact that there are existing networks that, you know, some people like to overlook, or there are success stories where people are engaged. They're joining groups that are involved in public lands management, whether it's on recreation or on wildlife. They're volunteering to maintain the trails. They're planting sagebrush and bitterbrush. They're picking up trash. They're talking with the Forest Service and BLM about how to improve the management. They're eyes and ears of the landscape out there. There are actually more than 10 different forest restoration collaboratives throughout the state of Idaho that advise the Forest Service on how to improve their forest management, looking at both at reducing hazardous fuels, making forests healthier, improving habitat for fish and wildlife, and enhancing recreation. So those are existing, and you can join those, and you can actually make a difference in your backyard forest that way.
That's excellent. And really, we appreciate your involvement and Idaho Conservation League's involvement in advocating for the value of public lands. I started the show with a trivia question about Idaho's public lands. What percent of Idaho is public land, John?
63%.
63%. That's almost two-thirds.
That's right.
And it's
so you say every acre of that has an advocate for it and someone who really appreciates it and cares fiercely about it. And that makes me really happy.
And it makes me happy. I can hit public land in two blocks from my house, you know, and so it's absolutely fantastic. John, we really want to thank you for joining us today. And for our listeners, if you want to learn more about our efforts and John's efforts to maintain our public lands and really get people excited about our public lands, please go to idahoconservation.org. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU-FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at kisu.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.